This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
All right, Parshas Hazino, everybody. Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud Zayin. Now, I'm going to apologize in the beginning that I am not going to say everything that I want to say on this. This is going to be partly everything that I was able to put together over the last couple days. It has been a busy couple of days, Baruch Hashem, and it should always be that way for everybody. But I was not able to finish it off. I did what I could, and we'll try to finish it off as much as possible. I'm sorry?
You don't know why it's busy.
It's busy because I just had a baby boy on Monday morning. So, yes, should be good. So the Malbim says, there are three issues with this pasuk, and Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud Zayin says, Loha. They will shecht to the demons that are not gods. Elohim lo yidu'um. Gods that no one knows about. Chadoshim mikarov ba'u. These new gods that have come from close by. Lo sarum avoseichem. None of them were known or recognized, feared, or worshipped by your fathers. These are new things, these shadim that people are worshipping, and that's something that the people got into over here. So the Malbim says there are three issues with what the people are doing right now. Number one is the fact that shadim are not gods and people are treating them as such, right? By the way, I should say, there are people who have an issue with saying the actual word shade, and they'd rather say it as shindalit, right? They'll say them that way. I don't have that Misorah. I don't have that Minug. I did not see it when I went through certain Sfarim. So I don't see it that way. So I'm going to say the word Shadim. If that is offensive, then I totally understand and I'm sorry. But I'm going to be saying it out like that. Shadim are not gods. And they're treating them as such. That's the first thing that's wrong. Number two, even if they are gods, they didn't choose you as their nation. And yet God chose you as their nation. So why would you go ahead and allow that to happen? That's number two. Number three, even if they did choose you, Hashem chose you first. Why are you ditching Hashem for this? This doesn't make any sense. Why would they leave him and go somewhere else for something that's brand new and not known by their parents? All three of those are indicated over here. Number one, they're lo aloha. Number two, they're Elohim lo yudaum. They didn't recognize you. And number three, chadash mi karobo lo sorum avasechem. There's things that just came in front of you. Those are the three problems, says the Malbim, with doing what we're doing over here with shading themselves. Tam Vidas from Strumbach says, we all know the Rambam, that the way Avodah Zarah started was by the times of Enosh, that in the door of Enosh, they looked up to the stars, they saw the constellation, they saw all the awesome stuff going out there, and they said, these are the real things out there. These are the real gods that are out there, and they started serving. They believed in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They believed there was a God behind everything, but this was the power behind a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world. So when they served the sun, the moon, the stars, and everything like that, what they were essentially doing is showing Hashem, we're really serving you, we're just allowing it to be through these stars, the moon, the sun, etc., and everything like that. That was a mistake. That was wrong. But at least they had Svara. At least their logic was, if our power is coming from the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the constellations, then let's give power back to the constellations, to the stars, the sun, and the moon. Let's give it back to them. That at least had Svara. Here, says the Talmud Asher, Schermbach says, this was just pure lahachis, purely to anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This didn't make any sense at all. As time went on, people gave in to their taivas, their own inner desires, their innate desires, again and again and again, and they began to worship things that there was no reason to worship. This wasn't like there's a sun, a moon, and the stars that you're benefiting from, that bring you koach onto the earth, that somehow have a Kabbalistic idea that are able to bring stuff down to you, this Shefa that comes down to you. It's nothing like that. This is just simply put, they see something that they like, they give into their taivas, and they started worshiping them. Shadim represents that type of an idol. Shadim represent this idea of, do what you want, I'll take care of it, I'll get stuff for you, I'll make sure you have everything you need. That's what it stands for, and that's what it goes through. They live their lives full of taiva and kefir, and says Rosh Schermbach, that is our biggest issue today. Obviously, no one is shechting to demons. Nobody is going around and giving over things to demons. But the idea behind what it means to shech to demons, the idea behind it is to give into your taivas and do what you want. That's problematic. That's the idea that we have to say, well, you can't do something like that. That's yizbuchu l'shedim lo aloha. You're treating life as if there's no God, doing whatever you want, shechting to the demons, so to speak, of your own self. Rashi translates lo aloha as meaning no power at all. They have no power. Not that they're not gods, which is also true, but they have no power as in the word El, as Elohim. It's a power, a powerful position. As we said last week from the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the other nations of the world have in their own lands a power that rules over them. There is such a thing. Enosh was right. There were Malachim and Mazalos and Kochavim that ruled over them. As we said from the Rabbeinu Bechaya last week, just the Rabbeinu Bechaya said, they shouldn't be worshiping them. They shouldn't be doing things like that. They might not be Chayav Misa for it, yet it still would be forbidden, but it's not considered avodah zarah mamish to do what they were doing, to believe in God and yet give koach to the different the constellations, etc., that are out there over there. Says Rashi, that's different over here. A little bit different from what we just said from Tam Vidas. The idea is that these shadim have no power at all. They fool people into making them think that, making you think that they have any power, that they have something to them, but there's no real need for them to be involved in the first place. All of these things, like the malacha and the mazals, obviously don't need to be there either. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need them to bring stuff into the world, but they were placed in the sky. Hashem runs his natural world through the mazalos, the kochavim, and everything else there. He allows things to go through there. That's how Shefa comes to the world. Therefore, there is an idea that if somebody would worship them, I can understand that mistake. That was Dor Enosh. It's a mistake. It's the wrong thing to do. But nonetheless, I get it. These shadim make no sense at all, says Rashi. It doesn't make any sense. There's something missing here. Rashi, that's Rashi's idea. The Baalei Tosfos give a mashal to explain it, and it's really based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph. It says like this. Person married a very beautiful woman. And he married this woman. Not only was she beautiful, she was stellar in her midos. Meaning, everything she did was that she was the nicest woman in the world. She was a great, great person. And everything about her was just absolutely the absolute best. He then decides he wants to marry another woman. So he decides he's going to marry a woman who's extremely not pleasant looking, has horrible midos, is the meanest person in the world, and everything she does, everyone just says, oy vey, stay away from that woman. Now, if he would marry another person, I guess that he would say to the equal of or similar to that person, that's one thing. But now that he's marrying somebody who's a little bit different, right, and a little bit different in a worse way, that makes the first wife even more jealous. What are you doing? To put it in our terms, because obviously polygamy has not been done for a while, for at least for Ashkenazim. Don't want to go the other way. But regardless, regarding this, maybe it's just referring to a guy and a best friend. If you have a best friend and he chooses another guy who you know is bad for him, is a bad guy, is not a good person at all, and just a bad friend, and your friend is choosing him as his best friend over you, then you get offended. You look at that and you say, well, what are you doing? Why would you do that? If it's somebody who's also a really nice guy, maybe you can deal with it, maybe we can go, but that's what you're going with? This mashal that the Baalei Tosfos will say helps us understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was thinking when we go into it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at it and says, listen, I don't want you worshiping the sun, the stars, and the moon, but I get it. You think that they have power because you're looking with your physical eyes. I get it. I'm still upset because they told you not to, but I get it. In the other nations, I understand where they're coming from. But Shadim, you're going for the lowest common denominator, something that has no power at all? Why would you do that? Why would you do that to me? That makes no sense. That doesn't make any sense at all. That's the idea behind the mashal, Sabalitos, to try to understand this. There's a Miyam Lois and a Shach over here as well, but we're going to skip that for right now. The Rush and the Das HaKanim says Shadim is not referring to actual demons. It's really a type of Avodah Zarah that is so disgusting, it involves demons in some way, shape, or form. The problem over here is that it's something that you have no shaychus to, something that a few years ago did not even exist, and somebody made it up, created it, and did something with it and said, here's something you can do now, and created something which is disgusting, and you know it's disgusting, and you were disgusted by it, but you got so used to it, you got into it, that Klal Yisrael should have known better than that. How dare you get involved with something like this over here? Okay. There's something even worse, says Rashi. It's not only that you're worshiping something that you consider to be an actual. This is something that is not even considered a god in the eyes of the other nations. Says Rashi, they're called the Jewish gods. They take a look at these shadim or this little thing that people are doing, and they're saying, oh, that's the Jewish god. The Jewish pantheon or whatever it is that they're worshiping, they're getting involved with that, not considering it for themselves. That's the idea behind it. And Tam Vidas says that the nations are shocked when they look at us. What in the world are they doing? They always win through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They have a history with Hashem, and this is what they're doing. They can't understand it. Rav Zilberstein says, this is really because of the high level that each Jew is on. He gives a story over here, and it doesn't have that much shaykhus to this pasuk, but it's a great story. He says, unfortunately, when in the early 2000s, when there was terrorist attack after terrorist attack after terrorist attack, so all the hospitals were obviously in high alert much of the year. They were just all looking for when was the next thing going to happen, and they had doctors on call waiting to happen for trauma units, etc., to take care of anything that would happen. So there was one, unfortunate terrorist attack that happened, and they pulled in the guy, and the guy was coming in, and it didn't look like he was going to make it. They were able to take him, but he was definitely failing rapidly. And the doctor saw him, and the guy told the doctor, come close. So the doctor came close, and he listened to him, and he said, I've got to tell you, I have money in my wallet. It's not mine. It belongs to somebody else that's, you know, somebody who's out there, whatever it is. You need to give it back to them. So he heard the name, and he said, I'll do what I can. The doctor said, I'll do everything I can. I don't know what I can do. He tried saving the guy. It didn't happen. So now he calls up Reb Zilberstein. He says, I know this family, I'm looking at the family right now. If I try to tell them that the money in the wallet is not his, they're not going to listen. They're not going to return the money. Should I reach into the wallet, pull out the money, which could make me lose my license, make sure it gets back to the rightful owner so I do Hashavas Aveda, or do I leave it in the wallet and let it be? Amazing question, right? There's two things over here. Number one, a guy right before he was dying, that's what he was thinking about, to pay back his final loan. That's an unbelievable thing right there. Number two, that a doctor is willing to lose his practice over Hashavas Aveda, over a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Both those things are absolutely unbelievably crazy. Unbelievably crazy, but it shows you the high level of a Jew. When we have Jews who are on that high of a level, doing these types of acts, which are so beneath how great a Jew is, then it's even worse. It's even worse. We look at the Jew and we say, how could you? This is not for you. This is not the right thing for you. Says Rav Zilberstein, that's the idea behind it. Then comes the word sa'arum. Lo sa'arum avoseichem. The word in the pasuk is spelled sin ayin vav resh yud men. The word is based on se'irim. What were we going to say, Paul?
So what happened?
With the guy, he took the money, he gave it back. Rav Zilberstein paskin that he could give it back. Yeah.
Keep his job?
He kept his job. I mean, he did it, you know, when the cameras weren't looking, I'm sure. And I don't know the name of the doctor, so you can't get him now. So I have no idea. Yeah, Ma.
Shabbos Aveda implies that you didn't own or pick up. Plus, he's making an assumption that this family won't.
First question, yeah, it is an Aveda. There's no question it was an Aveda. And he did make an assumption. He thought that they weren't going to do it. Maybe he knew them, maybe he knew whatever it was. That wasn't part of it.
If he'll already return it, then we can show more of it.
It's possible. I don't know if that, you could promise. When you're dealing with a mace right beforehand, when you're dealing with something like that, it's possible that you might be able to say anything. Like, yes, I'll do, etc. There's a famous story of the Marshal about that, where a person made another person promise right before his death, and the Marshal said it's not a neder. He immediately was mouth to the neder. So I don't think it was full of a full promise when it came down to that. Either way, regardless, Rashi says another explanation. He says, Se'arum, which is spelled Sinayin Resh Vavmem, is from the word Se'irim, which is a word that describes shadim in this world. It's used in Vayikra as well, in Perek Yud Zayin and Perek Yud Gimel. It's apparent that some of these demons appear to them in the form of goats. Now, in Greek and Roman mythology, they called them satyrs and fauns. I don't want to go into this. I'm assuming that people know these basic ideas. Fauns are supposed to be these evil creatures that do horrible, horrible things. And satyrs are like an easier type creature, but they're both the same thing, that they have goat legs and a human top. For those who have read, I'm assuming you haven't seen, C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, right? So there's a fawn in there, and he's a very, very nice fawn. Mr. Tumnus, I think, is the name. That takes me back a little bit, right? But I'm pretty sure that's the name of the fawn inside there. There are such things that, according to this, existed in our culture. And the Romans and the Greeks either took it from us, or they had it at the same time, or they were part of this when it came down to it. The Ramban in Parshat Achremos says, only crazy people can see them. Normal people cannot see these things, and that's how it appears to them. In Yeshaya, Yud Gimel Chaf Aleph, it says, Se'irim Yirak Dusham, there are these goats that would dance there upon the tummy places in the world. They play with people, says Ramban. They make them believe that they have powers, but they most certainly do not. The Sforno says, he points out that they die just like human beings. Their lifespans might not be like our lifespans. It might be a little longer, but apparently they're not gods when it comes down to there. What are you going to say, Joel?
So you're saying that these demons exist, but only crazy people?
Haven't gotten to that yet. It's possible they exist, but let's get down to the existence part in a little bit. Yeah.
They
These are one type.
There are 300 types that Rabbi Yochanan said were in one city, right? That's a Gemara in Gittin and Daf Samach Chasamad Aleph. So it's possible they're referring to more than just that. But this could be the one that we're referring to over here that they used to worship. Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni say the word Shadim come from the word Meshoded Mashod Hadas. It ruins your mind. It makes you go crazy. Then when you start thinking about these things, get involved with these types of things, it makes you afraid. And people literally lose their minds over this type of stuff. They just can't get over it. They think they're being chased by them or you're going to be hurt by them. They're frightened by them. That's where it comes from. Rav Hirsch says an interesting line. He says, Shodeid, Shin Dalad Dalad, is referring to a type of mechanical type of destruction where something is going to destroy you, something that you can see. The word Shod, Shin Vav Dalad, refers to an invisible force that causes destruction and cannot be explained in any way whatsoever. It's something on the outside, almost like an emotional wreck, where you feel so emotionally distraught that you're destroying yourself, you're taking yourself down from within. That's the idea behind it. And that's what these shadim are. Elohim lo yidu'um. No one knows what they are because they don't see them. They don't know them, says Rav Hirsch. There are things that get within you. But we've all seen people who are either crazy or have done things that are crazy because they cannot control their mind. You want to call that shadim, that's fine. But Rav Hirsch says that the idea behind what shadim represent, the fear, the irrational fear that comes behind them, is 100% this way. Maybe that's how it appears to them, that they see this goat-like type god, this seer, and that's the reason why it comes out this way. But who knows? If a person, he says Rav Hirsch, has emunah and bitachon Hashem, that means faith and trust, that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the best, you will never be bothered by these things. And although that's really difficult for me to say, that someone who's having a psychotic episode, just have faith and belief in God and you're going to be okay, that's ridiculous. Obviously, there's no way that you can say that to a person. But we can use it as a preemptive strike before a person goes into these types of things. Meaning, work on your emunah and bitachon now so that never happens in the future. I can't guarantee it won't happen. It depends on each person and the level of emunah and bitachon that you need. But the idea, says Rav Hirsch, behind it is when there's a terrible demon trying to destroy you from within, whether that's a physical object that we don't understand in our world or a spiritual emotional feeling that you can't get rid of. The way to get rid of it is by working on yourself and creating within yourself boundaries to be able to get rid of all of that spiritual filth. That's the concept behind it over here. And this is, he says it amazingly. He goes at the end, he says, a Jew should live in a world which is not haunted, where demons are no longer there, because he believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly with them. But if you're not in that world, and you don't believe in God, or you don't have a God helping you out at all times, then you're always constantly sacrificing to your demons in order to improve your life. And that destroys you. And that's the idea behind this pasuk over here. Noah, do you have a question?
Yeah, I thought Shlomo Melech saw a demon. He was a pretty...
Ashmedai, king of the demons. So we have in Samach Ches and Aleph and Gittin, right. That's the famous one, Samach Ches. I will tell you an unbelievable pshat in that Gemara that has... I heard from a person who I feel I thought was Elio and Avi for a while, then I realized he's just a normal guy, and then I was really, really upset because I was like, I had to kill Elio, and then I didn't, right? But his name was Kalman, Reb Kalman. Well, one of the best pshatim I've ever heard in that Gemara before in my life. It's basically the whole Gemara, I'm saying it in short, was Shlomo Melech against his own gaiva. And that's what Ashmedai, king of the demons, represented. So I'm not saying there was no such thing as Ashmedai. I gave a Shavuot shir 4 years ago. It was a 4.5-hour shir on the powers of demons and everything about them. I had probably around 175 different sources, right? And we went through. It took 4.5 hours to go through. I am not going to be able to wrap that up right over here. And plus, I never give over my Shavuot shir ever again. But I will tell you that was the main goal of my shir. I don't know if Shadim actually exist, if they're physically around us. But that doesn't matter to me. The idea behind what they represent is 100% true, and that's 100% in front of us at all times. We see it every single day of our lives, and I think that's the idea behind the Gemara that we can take out of, because I don't think many of us are going to have fights with Ashmedai, king of the demons, very often. But that's the idea behind it, and it's an amazing, amazing idea. I'm sorry? I don't have gaiva, but you guys do, yeah. So that's a problem for everybody else, but me, I'm okay. No, even an eighth and an eighth, I have nothing. Ramban in Achremo says that it also comes from the word yista'er, yudsin tuf ayin resh. It shocks people when they see them. It could be that there's another pshat behind these, what these shadim represent, that a shade also refers to sadeh, as in the field, that it's in open fields, in these open areas, as well as shodeid, meaning a desolate area where no one else is around. He says, and this is what the Ramban goes on, Shaitim survive in areas, whatever this means, in areas and places which is uninhabitable for human beings. Whether it's extreme cold or extreme heat, the way the Netziv says it, since they were created from ruach and esh, wind and fire. They do not have ufer or mayim in them. Because they don't have the coarse elements of ufer and mayim, dirt and water, they're just ruach and esh, and that's that. Therefore, the Ramban says, they have the ability to fly. Therefore, they're able to hear things that we don't hear. They can hear from Achori Apargod. Therefore, they have wings. Because they don't have the limitations that we have being physical beings and physical bodies, they don't have that. That's the reason why the Medrash Rabbah says all Shadim are shapeshifters. Because they don't have a physical form that they show in front of you. This is something that any one of them can have at any time. They can cause damage because they don't understand the physical world. They don't get what we're doing over here, and therefore the ability to damage more than anything else. And Netziv adds on to it. They do eat and they do drink, but they don't likely eat, drink, or drink human food. There is something that they have. There is some nourishment that they get out of the world, but nonetheless, it's not like us. They're not eating cholent and drinking Coke. That would make them Jewish, and they're not Jewish. So they would be, wouldn't be that way. It seems they also have taivas. Their taiva is animal blood. That if somebody would give animal blood over to them, that would be like a taiva to them. Like we have cake or cookies, etc., or chalan, right? This would be what they like more than anything else. It's something physical, I guess, that gives them some type of chiyus, some physical chiyus that brings them into the world, that makes them do into something a little bit better. But who knows? Says in Netziv, they're like carrier pigeons. They can do shlichus, they can do messengerships, they can be sent to do something, but they have no ability to think their way through it. They have no ability to make a real decision on their own. And they have no ability to fully understand what they're doing. And therefore, they might lie. They could fool people. And therefore, even when a person asks them things and do things, they don't know what they're talking about. You should not listen whatsoever. In Kufayin Tes, in Kufayin Tes in Yoredeya, it goes through all the different things that a person should not be doing when it comes to magic and stuff like that. One of them is this. Maaseh Shadim technically is not usur. But if a person gets involved with it, there are horrible things that end up happening because of it. And that's the idea behind it. Yes?
Mar Megillah says that there's a story about, I think it was Yeshua ben Nun, he was traveling, and he saw...
Malach, that's in Navi. In Yoshua. See, you must go to Yeshiva, because it's really in Navi, in Yoshua, Parakeh. Right? But I know it from Megillah. No, I get it. I totally get it. Right. But yes, that was a malach that was sent specifically to give Yeshua a warning. That was probably not a shade.
It was. How can you bow down to it? Right? So he said, because he said, the Malach said,
he was
a Sadvashem.
Rav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he said HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, right. So he's not a Shade. Shade don't say those types of things.
Maybe he doesn't know what he's thinking.
Doesn't matter. Still can't say it. He would destroy himself if he said HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. That's something for another time. There is Rabbeinu Bachai. The Rabbeinu Bachai says the idea behind it is that they're born Erev Shabbos Bein HaShmashos because they were hurriedly made and have nothing to do with the context of creation. They're new to everything. They're Chadashim Mikarov Bo'u. They don't have the ability to channel the physical world to their advantage. They know certain things, but they can't do others, and they just can't bring them into those types of things. There's an Or HaChaim HaKadosh over here that also goes into the powers that Shadim have that are a little there. There's a Panim Yafos, etc., that says that when a false Navi gets involved, you got to be very careful not to listen to what he says because they have the ability to go through. But regardless, I think the lesson behind all this is pretty obvious. The clear lesson that comes out from, yes, again, Shadim may have a physical aspect. There may be actual physical Shadim in the world that have the ability to do things. I don't know, and I haven't seen them. And if anybody here has seen them, again, according to the Ramban, that means you're crazy. By definition, a person who's seen them has gone crazy. So I don't know if anybody would actually go through. But I definitely believe there's something more to this. Everything we've mentioned about the powers that these Shadim have, and I don't mean like their ability to fly and things like that, it refers to a person who's just a bad person. Keep good friends. This pasuk is trying to tell you. Stay away from the people that act like demons in your normal life. People that act so evilly and so wrong in everything they do, stay away from those people. Keep away from them. Those are the ones that lo sarum avoseichem, your father, your parents, your grandparents, never wanted anything to do with them, and that saved them, that allowed them to remain the people that they were, the good people that they were. When you get involved with the wrong crowd, with the wrong people, the result is disastrous. And that's the idea of staying away from everything else. We all know people who constantly lie, steal, or do things to get other people's attention just for that reason. We have to stay away from that. And that, I think, is the true lesson behind the pasuk, aside from the obvious pshat, in which we're dealing with things that are a little bit beyond what we understand. The Chassam Sofer in Toras Moshe, as well as in the Chassam Sofer Al HaTorah, says this is referring to a new phenomenon that happened in his time. So historically speaking, the Chassam Sofer lived in the early 1800s. He died in around 1855, 1860. Somebody might be able to correct me on that one. But he was born around 1780, died around that time. He was very heavily involved in the Reform movement after Moses Mendelssohn turned it into a movement, and then eventually it became on its own in the Enlightenment that was happening all around him in Hungary. And the Chassam Sofer was a brilliant, brilliant man and used many, many hours to destroy anything he could when it came to the Reform movement. He said that this pasuk is a reference to this phenomenon. He says normally when we talk about Yoritas Adoros, that a generation is just not as good as the parents, it's true up until a point. Meaning, yes, we are closer to Har Sinai, closer to Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, my kids will never be as good as me when it comes to that aspect. But in other aspects, there's greatness that can be had by a younger generation that the older generation didn't have. Some say that the Ikvah Sinah Meshicha, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has a whole piece on this in Kovetz Mamarim, is the greatest of all generations, whether that's Gilgulim-wise or anything. The greatest of all generations. We're living among the greatest of neshamos that have ever existed in the world. So what does that mean? How does that work? There's Yoritas Adoros, in which a child will never be as great as their parents. But on the other hand, we do see greatness stemming from kids that is not there by everybody else. What does that mean exactly? Says the Chassam Sofer. Yoritas Adoros is exaggerated. Yoritas Adoros means there's a certain aspect that no one here would pick up on, in which the next generation does not have. There's something missing, but you won't be able to see it because it's too soon. When is a door? What's a generation? Is a generation 10 years? Is a generation 30 years? Is a generation when you have a kid? What's a generation? How do you define a generation? How does that go exactly? So he says, there's no way to really define it, says the Chassam Sofer. A door is just the next bunch of people. How can you tell there's Yoritas Adoros? You can't. You can't. Normally it goes that way, says the Chassam Sofer. But at certain times, you will see Chadashim Mikaru Ba'u, brand new things. Chadashim was also the word they used for the Reform movement. He used to go around saying Chadash Aser Min HaTorah, which is, obviously, it's referring to Chadash, new grain, is Aser from the Torah to eat until you get to the second day of Pesach. He referred to the Reform movement is Aser Min HaTorah. Chadashim Mikaru Ba'u. This is a brand new phenomenon, says the Chassam Sofer, that we have never dealt with before. Now, they were looking at generations where the parents were nothing like the kids, where the kids were literally jumping levels, and you could see a serious yerida with every generation. Every 15 years, 20 years, the Chassam Sofer is looking and seeing a difference. I am telling you, and I've only been teaching for 2005, so what year is it now? 2018, for 13 years, right? So I've been teaching for 13 years. I can tell you there is a major difference in the attention span of every kid. And you can blame cell phones, whatever. That doesn't make a difference to me. But there is a difference in the attention span of what I was able to give over and what I'm able to give over now. And I don't think the kids are that different. There are still great kids and some kids that are better than the kids that I had 13 years ago. There's no question about that. But there is a major difference. There is a huge difference. I can see it. And that's just 13 years and just me. I'm sure that this has been seen by other people. And I'm telling you, I don't want to blame cell phones for this. I think it's the whole, this may be part of it. Says the Chassam Sofer, ever since his time, things have jumped from generation to generation where there's been massive losses. And you can see it. And even through a Baal Tshuva movement where people start moving themselves back, there's still something that's missing. Something that's missing. Did you know my great-grandfather knew all of Tehillim Baal Peh? Did you know that I can barely get the first parak down Baal Peh? It's a major issue. What is wrong with me? Why can't I do it? And I tried. I've tried many, many times to learn Tehillim Baal Peh. I can't do it. My great-grandfather knew it. My great-grandfather, we're not dealing with so many years ago. I'm not that old. Right? How is it possible that they're able to? There's something that's missing that we're missing, says the Chassam Sofer, that's there, and it's never happened. He says, Lo sa'arum avosechem, well, we don't measure up to our fathers. There's something missing, and it's something that we have to be aware of. He says, the work now is to try to figure out a way to stop it. stop it as much as possible, and build up. And we've done a tremendous job at that. We've had tremendous, the amount of people going to yeshiva and doing things like that are amazing. But the concept, he says, that's going on over here of what's happening is all referenced in this pasuk itself. I'm going to say over a story. I wouldn't normally tell over the story, but because it's a short week, and it's a really, really awesome story, I'm going to tell it over to everybody. This is brought down by Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Shlomo Yosef Zevin, that was the street that in Neve Yaakov I went to base, so it was right there. Rav Zevin Street is Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. He was a famous Chabad Chassid, and he wrote a sefer called Sipurei Chassidim, Stories of Chassidim. Some of those stories are the craziest stories you've ever seen before in your life. And this is pretty much in there over there. But he does bring it down by this pasuk, and it's an amazing, amazing story. So he says the following. He says, outside of the Tzemach Tzedek's office, there were a couple of Hasidim that were sitting around, and they were telling over Gedolim stories, these different Gedolim stories, and telling over different things of Hasidus. So they lit a candle for the neshama that they were talking about, for the neshama of the Tzedek they were talking about, they lit a candle. So the Tzemach Tzedek came outside. He saw that they were talking. He said, what Tzedek are you guys speaking about right now? What Tzedek are you referring to? So they said, we're talking about Rav Mendel of Horodok. So they said, Rav Mendel of Horodok. He was also the Rav of Vitebsk. So he said, Rav Mendel, he said, light more candles. Light up the whole room so that the whole room becomes lit up. So lit more candles. And Tzemach Tzedek said, I have a story to tell you about Rav Mendel that shows you how great Rav Mendel actually was. There was a shochet who also served as a mohel in his town in Horodok, that was a great Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. But he had certain things he wasn't careful about. Certain things that he was maybe lax in. And that was something the Rebbe saw, the Rebbe of Horodok saw him. And Rav Mendel went up to him often and said, you need to work on these things. This is something you need to work on now. And the man said, whatever, Rabbi, I'll take care of it later. But he never did. Rav Mendel said, you don't understand. The chitzonim, whatever that means in the lore, in the Hasidish lore, that means the demons are trying to get you. There's someone out to get you. And if you don't work on this now, they're going to grab a hold of you. They're going to grab your neshama and you'll never be able to get out. So he said, okay, whatever, I'll do it. But he didn't. He absolutely didn't. So one morning a wagon came to pick him up. You know, it's a Hasidish story. There's a wagon inside here. And it came to pick up the shochet for a bris that someone was having the next day in a town that was further away. So he was used to this. He had his mila bag. He grabbed it. He went into the wagon, right? And they traveled through on a road, whatever it is. And eventually they came to a
forest.
Forest, thank you. Of course a forest. They came to a forest. They traveled off-road into the forest itself. The guy started turning to the wagon driver and said, where are we going? The wagon driver didn't answer at all. So they went through, etc. Eventually they came to the other side of the forest. They came to a certain home. Got to the home. The wagon driver let him out. He went inside the house, and he was shown the baby. When he walked in, the mother of the baby was shocked. She said, everyone get out of the room. I want the mole to check out the baby. As the mole was checking out the baby, the woman whispered to him and said, you are in a place that is completely tummy, in a place that's very, very unclean. The mazikin, these chitzonim, rule over this town. I am a Jewish woman. I was grabbed by them for certain sins that I had, and I'm not able to leave. My baby is half me, half from these chitzonim, from these creatures, from this out there. And I demanded that the baby has a bris milah. Crazy story, right? So I demanded that the baby has a bris milah. So must have pulled you in. She said, you're going to be caught and you're going to be kept here unless you do something. So what do I need to do? She said, do not take anything from them. Do not take anything. No food, no gift, nothing. And if you leave the town without taking anything, maybe they'll let you go and they won't let you do anything. So he said, okay. So that night, they had a massive party. They all came through. They came in, and all of these look like human beings are all partying and eating, etc. And they call over the mall, and they say to the mall, come, join us. He says, nope. The night before a bris, I fast. Lied. Right? But the night before a bris, I fast. I'm not eating anything. So next morning, he does the bris milah. Everything goes well. They invite him to the bris milah. They said, it's your meal. It's your meal. You can have everything. You can have the best of everything here. So he said, no, it's a yortzeit of mine. I'm going to fast today, and I'd like to go back as soon as possible. I'd like to spend the rest of my yortzeit at home, right, if that's possible. He said, okay. They got him a wagon, and they ended up going back. So they brought him back to his town. As soon as he got back to Horodok, he immediately jumped off the wagon, put his bags down. Before unpacking, he ran over to Rav Mendel's house. And started screaming. He said, Rebbe, help me. But Rav Mendel knew he was coming. He sent out some of his gabayim, sent him out there, and they called him. The Rebbe doesn't want any tumah inside his house. He can't enter inside his house. He started crying. started crying. He said, Rebbe, you have to let me in. Rebbe, you have to let me in. But Remendel wouldn't let him in. He called Allah from his window. He said, I warned you. I told you not to get involved in this. You got involved in this. Now it's too late. There's nothing I can do to help you. He said, Rebbe, please. I'll do anything. What do I need to do? So eventually Remendel came to the window and he said to him, there's nothing you can do. The only power that they have is that you think they're real. Again, I don't know what this means exactly. All you have to do is say to them, you're bottle. You mean nothing. You can't do anything to me. You have no ability to touch me. Nothing. And if you do that, if you say they're bottle, that they mean absolutely nothing, that they can't affect you, then you'll be saved. So time out. Rav Zevin doesn't talk about this. He doesn't say what this guy's sin was or what he had done wrong. My assumption is that what the guy did wrong is that he didn't have emunas chacham. That he didn't have any belief in what the Chachamim told him. I'm sure it sounds like he made fun of the rabbis and what they used to say. And he said, anything that this rabbi says this, he would make fun of that, he would say that, and whatever it was, all these stories are garbage. And therefore, his tikkun was through listening to his rebbe, even though it made no sense whatsoever. I'm assuming that that was the problem. That was what he had to fix up. That was the chait, and this is what he did. So he did it. He went back to the town. They called him back just a few days later. He got into the wagon. Apparently, he wasn't able to refuse that. He got into the wagon, came back to the town. And as they got there, all the, whatever it is, these chitzonim, started to scare him out of his mind, to make him do something, to make him part of their town itself. And he said, no, you're nothing. You mean nothing to me. And he's crying. But he's saying, you mean nothing to me. You're absolutely nothing. So they bring him in to whatever the king, the general, the governor, whatever it is that's in charge there. They bring him up. They said, this guy is claiming that we're nothing. This guy claims that we can't do anything to him. He said, you don't think I can do anything to you? And he starts doing some crazy things. And the guy says, you're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. So the governor of the town, right, the governor of these chitzonim, says to them, who told you that you can say such things to me? Who told you that you can believe such things? He said, Remendel of Horoduk. The governor just moved back. He said, Remendel of Horoduk, we've got nothing on him. We have no ability to touch anybody who has anything to do with Remendel. If you have what to do with Remendel, we have no shaykhus to you. Send him back. So he sent him back. And he went back and he told Remendel his story. Remendel said, okay, that means that you're saved. From now on, you have to work on this aspect. You have to work on this one thing. If you do that, things will be much better for you. It's exactly what he did. Suffice to say, obviously, the Shochet was very careful to speak of his Rebbeim with reverence and to do better things from that point on. Tzemach Tzemach turned to his Tzadikim, and he told them, you see, Remendel was a very, very special person. Remendel was not the person like anybody else over there. Remendel was a very special person. So that's a story that goes through. But again, whether or not these things exist, I don't want to say exist. They exist. Whether or not there is a physical aspect to them, right? That's not the point. I don't think any of that is the point. Could it be that Shadim are bacteria? Listen, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik here in Chicago used to say such things. I did find a sefer called Kuntres Yad HaShadim years ago that spoke about this, about 7 or 8 pages that deals with this. It was written in the, I think it was the late 1700s when they right after they had discovered bacteria and they realized that it was there, a guy came out and said, this is Shadim. Bacteria refers to Shadim. Amazing chat by that guy. He says that refers every Gemara. You can explain according to that. And that's really what the Shavuot was all about, how that can explain the way. But maybe there's a physical aspect to them, but that's not the point. What Shadim represent and the powers that they have of Mishodeid Hadas, of making you feel there's a power that you're missing, making you feel scared, afraid when they're around. That's the power of what Mazikin represents. And that's something that we, with our emunah and our bitachon, and our power is to really believe in God, to say, we're not zoveach l'shedim lo aloha. We shecht dafka to HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. We're moser nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. That saves us, and that makes us into great people. Should be zoche to only do great things, guys. Have a great Yom Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.